Parashav Vayera, as is true of really all the parshas in this season, it's really packed with events, episodes, and discussions. The first discussion, actually, of Vayera that I would like to get involved in this evening actually relates to the end of Parshas Lech Lecha as well. As we know, in the beginning of Vayera, Avram and Sarah are visited by their three guests, and one of them bestows a bracha, gives news to Sarah that she will have a child in a year's time. And as the pasuk tells us, Sarah laughed, "Vatitzchak Sarah bekirba lemor." That's in Perek Yud Ches pasuk Yud Beis. "Vatitzchak Sarah bekirba lemor." She laughed and said, "Acharei velosi haisa li edna, after I've been withered, will I be young again? Vaduni zakein, my husband's old," and that's both prospective parents are both old. And Sarah was criticized for this, upbraided. Next pasuk, "Vayemar Shem al Avraham, lama zet zachaka Sarah lemor, afu namaleit bani zakanti." Why did she laugh? "Haypalei me'ashem davar." And yet, although this is quite a well-known episode, something very similar seems to have happened just a few days earlier with Avram himself. In the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem tells him as well that he will have a child. And in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin, "Vayipol Avraham al panav, vayitzchak, vayitzchok, vayomer belibo, alaven mi'ah shanai valeit." He also laughs and says, "Can it be 100 years? Someone who's 100 years old will have a child." "V'im Sarah habas 90 shana teleit," and Sarah's 90. So it's almost like the mirror image, each one talking on their behalf and behalf of the spouse. And Avram gets a pass. Avram, we do not find any criticism of Avram. Apparently, the two laughters were not the same. Except, why were they not the same? They looked the same. And many Mefarshim discuss this, and Rashi himself talks about it and explains that here, the laughter, in Avram's case, was one of happiness, and the person's allowed to be happy and express in that way not so much disbelief, but rather it's a way of just expressing how great the miracle would be. In Sarah's case, there was more an element of disbelief. How does Rashi know this? Rashi points our attention to Unculus, and we do not always do Unculus justice because we assume that he's saying whatever the pasuk says. I mean, that's as far as we get in Unculus. If you know the pasuk, then ipso facto, you know what Unculus will say. But that's incorrect. The Targum of Unculus, he himself, a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, we see the Rishonim relate to it with great covered, and they mine his words because it's not only a translation, it's also a peirush. And Unculus actually translates the very same word in Lashon HaKodesh, vayitzchak and vatitzchak, in two different ways. In Parshas Lech Lecha, with reference to Avram, Unculus translates the word vayitzchak, v'chadi. V'chadi relates to the word chedva, which is joy. Every Aramaic word in roots is a Hebrew word or related to a Hebrew word. V'chadi is joy. Whereas, with regards to Sarah, the word vatitzchak, Unculus says v'chaychat, which is more laughter in the disbelieving sense. Well, Rashi, in a sense, has explained to us on what basis he distinguishes between the two laughters. Namely, he pointed us to Unculus. But he would then need to go to Unculus and say, well, then how do you know that they're different? Because the pasuk says, vayitzchak, exactly the same word, vatitzchak, with Sarah. Some people say it can be derived contextually. The pasuk with Avram begins with vayipol Avraham alpanov, which is much more of a religious thing, and therefore it's much more within a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The laughter presumably therefore is of a more acceptable nature. And that's Rashi's well-known distinction, and other Mepharshim distinguish in a different way. But I came across what for me was quite a chiddush in terms of the laughter of Avram and the laughter of Sarah in the writings of the Akedas Yitzchak. The Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, who we quote on occasion, one of the later Rishonim, he actually was at the time of the Girush Sfarad, he himself was exiled from Spain. And his Peirush is very special indeed. And he's well capable of being Mechadish and explaining the Psukim in his way. And the Akedah says, if you wish to know what was the difference between the laughter of Avram and the laughter of Sarah, which is what everybody wants to know, the answer, says the Akedah, in my understanding, is there was no difference. They were both the same. Each one, and it was the first reaction, and although there, it's on the level of the others, even the first reaction has to be correct, but in each case it was the passing thought of, can it be? And should you say, says Akedas Yitzchak, if Avram's laughter also partook of that element of, can it be, well then why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not criticize him, or did not rebuke him, or correct him? Says Akedah, we have a principle. And that is expressed or illustrated in the case, for example, of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, so they died through bringing the Eish Zara on the day of the setting up of the Mishkan, as we know. That's in Parshat Shmini. Although Rashi tells us, and his source is Chazal, that the essential issue over which they were deserving of death did not begin then. It wasn't rooted there. It was actually at the time of Matan Torah, where the Pasuk tells us in the end of Parshas Mishpatim, Shmos Perek Kaf Dalet, Vayechazu Et HaElokim, Vayochlu Vayishtu, they had this vision or encounter with Hashem, and they ate and drank, which according to Chazal is interpreted negatively, as if to say they took it not as seriously in context as they should have. And at that point, or perhaps it was more for their own personal enjoyment, however one understands it, that was already considered reprehensible, so much so they were deserving of death. And why was retribution not exacted on the occasion of when the scene of the crime, so to speak, when it actually happened? Kedei shelo la'arbev simchasam, in order not to ruin the joy of the occasion. It was, after all, Matan Torah, it's a happy time, and therefore even people that incurred some type of punishment, justice was not meted out on that occasion, so as not to ruin the occasion, but rather there was a stay of justice, and it happened at a later event. That's a very interesting yesod, really, principle, that sometimes a person can be liable to be punished, but the occasion does not deserve to be marred by that, and therefore it will come out at a later time. Parenthetically, one may ask, if the idea of not punishing them at the time of Matan Torah, when they actually sinned, was in order not to ruin a joyous occasion, so why was the occasion that they were punished the only other joyous occasion that we are aware of at that time, which is the first day of the setting up of the Mishkan? They're even connected. Yom Chasunaso is Matan Torah. Yom Simchas Libo is the setting up of the Mishkan of all times to be deferred to. That's a question that itself will need to be deferred because it deserves its own discussion, which is a polite way of saying I don't know at the moment. But we do see this principle, and the Akedas Yitzchak applies this principle to the situation of Avram. When Avram was told this news, that was the time that he was given the mitzvah of Milah. That was the day when Milah was introduced to the Jewish people, which was received the Simcha, and it's such an important part of Judaism, really. And therefore, even as he laughed, and the Akedah understands that there was perhaps something to be desired in that laughter, he was not criticized on that occasion, lahavdil, like those other situations, in order to not mar the joy of the occasion. That's quite a chiddush. And should you ask, says Akedas Yitzchak, but surely something has to happen sometime, and again, lahavdil, with regards to Nadav and Avihu, it didn't happen then, but it happened later on, which means if there is room for criticism of Avram on his level, then if it wasn't leveled or meted out at that time. It should happen sometime, but we don't find that Avram is criticized. Only Sora says, Akedas Yitzchak, it depends how you read the psukim. And he finally addresses a question that we have raised for a number of years. And that is the beginning of Vayera, as we know, Sarah laughs, Vatitzchak Sarah Bekirba, and that's considered to be somewhat incorrect, and therefore she is criticized. But how is she criticized? Who criticizes her? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how does he do so? Pasuk Yud Gimel says, Vayomer Hashem El Avraham, Lama Zetzachaka Sarah? Hashem says to Avram, why did Sarah laugh? Which is an interesting shaila. Except there's another question. If the problem is with Sarah, why are you asking Avram? Why not talk to Sarah direct? And in fact, there had to be things maneuvered as a result of this. As we know, the famous Gemara, that in Masechet Yevamos and Daf Samechei, that as, because Hashem is talking to Avram, he doesn't tell Avram exactly what Sarah said. Because Sarah said, V'adumi zakeh, my husband is old, even though he was. But it's not nice for him to hear that in her words, and therefore Hashem changed it, shino mipnei ha-sholem, to say v'ani zakanti. Why did he change? Because it's not nice for Avram to hear what Sarah said. But why should Avram have to hear anything that Sarah said? Why does Hashem not just address Sarah directly? Why did you laugh? Which is a very interesting shaila. How should Avram know why she laughed? He didn't even know that she laughed. If she laughed inside, Avram didn't hear it. So how's he meant to explain it? Says the Akedah, this was where the laughter of Avram found its mark. In other words, Avram was deserving of a reprimand, so to speak, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so was Sarah. And because it was deferred till the time that Sarah laughed, Avram received it indirectly because he was somehow questioned about Sarah. That also implicates him, which was really addressing his own laughter. So this, I believe, is quite a chiddush, as I said. The Akedas Yitzchak, one of the Gedolei Harishonim, in terms of how to understand those two parshiyos. Okay, but again, as we know, and we don't need to say, but we always do say, it's the Madrega of the others to be taken to task for the first thought that comes into your mind, and you are 89 years old, and you are 99 years old. You'll be criticized for that if you're Avram Avinu, if you're Sarah Imenu, and those are Madregas. Those are criticisms that we aspire to receive. Moving on, in Perek Yudches, we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram of his plans to destroy Sodom, to overturn Sodom, and presumably it's with the understanding that Avram will daven for them, which he does. And as an introduction to his tefillah, and it's a lengthy, really negotiation almost, it's one of the longest conversations we have, I think, in the entire Torah, certainly with Avram Avinu, maybe 45, okay, then 40, and then keep them going down. And Avram introduces his whole bid for Sodom in Pasuk Kaf Zayin. Sorry, that's not the introduction, but it's near the beginning. He's already asked for 50. The Pasuk Kaf Zayin states, Vayan Avraham Vayomar, Hineinah Ha'alti L'daber El Hashem, I have just begun, or Ha'alti, I have a strong desire, like Ho'il, to speak to Hashem, va'anochi afar va'efer. He mentions that he's afar va'efer. Now, what is the meaning of afar va'efer? What does Avram mean to indicate by this? He's davening for Sodom. What difference does it make if he's afar va'efer? And what does it mean? Rashi famously says that, in a sense, it's a statement of abnegation and nullification. He's saying that I'm nothing, although I'm nothing, nonetheless, in spite of being afar va'efer. And what? Why is he off of Afer? How is he dirt and how is he dust? Pardon me, as dust and how is he ashes? Ukvar hayisi ra'uy lios afar ayidei hamalachim. By this stage, I should already be dust due to the war with the four kings and the five. Rushing headlong into that war, Avram expected to be killed. The Medrash says he expected to die, O Kiddush Hashem. It's not natural to survive a war like that. It's him and his 318 Talmidim. And I should have been Afer also, ashes. How so? Aide Nimrod. Through Nimrod, who threw him into the fire, he should have been burnt. Lulei rachamecha asher amdu li, were it not for your mercy. And in a sense, therefore, Avram is completely nullifying himself in this way. Interestingly, if indeed Ophir Va'efer are references to those two episodes, it's interesting to note that Avram mentioned Ophir before Efer, even though the war with the kings was after the confrontation with Nimrod. That's a Rashi question. But in any case, that is the measure of Ophir Va'efer according to Rashi. I came across a very wonderful interpretation of these words said by Avram, Vanochi Ophir Va'efer, in explaining or in introducing his tefillah in the drashas of the Oneg Yom Tov. The Oneg Yom Tov, Rabbi Yom Tov Halperin, one of the great poskim, he's known really for his tshuvas, one of the greats of the 1800s, the Rav of Bialystok. But he has drashas also, Yodav Ravlo, in all areas of Torah. And the Oneg Yom Tov says like this. The basis of the matter here is to appreciate that Avram's attainments and Avram's midos will, in a sense, be passed down to his descendants. We know this is true with regards to the Avos in general, with the classic comment of Rav Chaim Volozhin in his Perush Ruach Chaim on Pirkei Avos, on two Mishnayos that mention Avram one after the other, the 10 generations from Noach to Avram, and the 10 trials of Avram. And interestingly, in the first Mishnah, it says, Asara Doros, mi Noach ad Avram. And the second Mishnah says, Asara Nisyonos, Nisnasa Avram Avinu. So the first Mishnah says there were 10 generations from Noach to Avram. And the second Mishnah says there were 10 trials that Avram Avinu was tested with. And the question, of course, is the more expansive presentation would be expected to be first, as if to say, the first mention of Avram, so then say Avram Avinu, and then you can, in a sense, curtail or trim it down. Here it's the other way around. Originally he's Avram, and then in the second mission he's Avram Avinu. And Reb Chaim Volozhin explains that the relationship of Avram to his descendants is not merely biological and it's not merely historical. Avram is the Av of the Jewish people in the sense that all of his spiritual attainments then become part of the legacy of the Jewish people. And he goes on to describe how, as genetics go, this is almost the spiritual genetics of the Jewish people. And some genes are recessive and some skip a generation and some... And so it is. So some people got the eyes and some people got the hair and some people get the love of Eretz Yisrael and some people get the ability to withstand adversity or even be prepared to offer everything they have. All of these are different tests of Avram, in a sense, coming out in his children. That's part of Mayafi Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, says Reb Chaim, that's why in the first Mishnah, when it talks about the generations from Noach to Avram, it calls him Avram because it's referring really to him as Avram in history at that point, and that's his name. But the second Mishnah, which comes to talk about the Nisyonos of Avram, at that point we refer to him as Avram Avinu, because the Avinu factor is of the essence when you talk about Nisyonos, because as Avinu, each Nisyon that he passed then becomes his legacy for his descendants. That's a wonderful interpretation of Reb Chaim Volozhin. And the truth is, what one may take this a step further, as the Oneg Yom Tov does, not only shall we say, the two complement each other, of course, not only do we say that Avram's attainments, his spiritual attainments, are passed down to his descendants. In a sense, Avram, as he's going through all these things, he contains within him, really, the Jewish people, as if to say, at that stage, it's Avram. I mean, he is the Jewish people. They will come from him, but they're currently in him, in micro, so to speak. I mean, he is a one-person embodiment of the Jewish people. And in fact, this resonates very nicely with the Perush of the Mizrahi, Rabbi Leo Mizrahi, on the Rashi in the beginning of Lech Lecha, quoting the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim and Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, in explanation of Gadol, what does it mean? I'll make you into a great nation. Says the Gemara, quotes by Rashi, Zehu she'omrim Elokei Avram. Thus we say Elokei Avram, based on these words, Gadol. And the question is, how does Hashem telling Avram that he will make him into a great nation result in us saying Elokei Avram? And the Mizrahi explains that Ve'ese Cholagoy Gadol, Hashem never really is referred to as Elokei of an individual. We'll always really call him Elokei Yisrael or Elokei Yaakov in the sense of the Jewish people called Yaakov. You never really find Hashem being called Elokei of an individual. And the point is, one needs the standing of the nation in order to be deserving of having that appellation, Hashem is Elokei Yisrael. Says the Mizrahi, when Hashem says to Avram, Ve'esechol agoy gadol, it means, according to the Gemara, and this is how we see the higher level, not only from you will come a great nation, I will make you a great nation, meaning I will consider you to be the great nation. I'm looking at you, Avram, and you represent already the nation called Klal Yisrael. If that's true, then we can say Elokei Avram, as surely as you can say Elokei with reference to the Jewish people, you can say Elokei with reference to Avram, because he is the Jewish people in micro, in person. And so too with Yitzhak and Yaakov, La'avarechecha, La'gad L'shemecha, to further expand that idea, that's the perush of the Mizrahi in that Gemara. And therefore, in a sense, every attainment of Avram, one could say, is invested and vested in his descendants who are yet in him. And therefore, there is a fascinating halachic discussion that relates to one of the malachas of Shabbos, the malacha of Lisha, kneading, one of the Lamed Tes. And what is kneading? Kneading is to take disparate elements and to combine them together through a certain medium until they become a cohesive whole. The halacha, in terms of the Oraisa, we're not going to get too much into the details, but in terms of the essential Oraisa level of the malacha, the halacha distinguishes between things that are called bargibul, things that really come together as one. When you add water, they'll mamish become like one. Like flour, for example. You add water to flour, it becomes a one piece of dough. Or what's called eino bargibul. Even when you add water, in a sense, you just take those things and you made them wet. They never really become one unity. And that's also on a drabana level, but not to araisa. Gibul and Eino Bar Gibul, unified and yet separate. And the classic examples of what Bar Gibul can be unified to one and what remains separate, says the Gemara, are dirt and ashes. When you add water to dirt, it becomes mud. That's one thing. That's Bar Gibul. Whereas when you add water to ashes, it just remains ashes with water and it never really comes together in that way. The particles are yet separate. And therefore, says the Oneg Yom Tov, what Avram is saying is he's well conscious that in davening for Sodom, which is really itself a great chiddush, in a sense we say, well, this is the middle of Avram. He's loving kindness. One could make a strong case for saying if you have the mid of loving kindness, you should endorse the destruction of Sodom because they're deadly people. So it's not so clear. And yet Avram, the mid of Chesed overcomes that and he really extends himself and he's davening even for the people of Sodom. And in so doing, he is instilling within his descendants who are currently part of him, because as a result of Avram having expressed and given vent to his feelings of kindness for everyone, if he does it as a person, and the Jewish people are yet part of him, so then in the fullness of time, as they become their own people, they will yet have some of that compassion. He's aware that currently it's all inside of him, and he's investing in the future as they become the nation. And this, as Oneg Yom Tov, is alluded to in Avram saying, Hineinoho alti ledaber l'Hashem. I have the strong desire to speak to Hashem at this stage, even about such a people, such an expression of loving kindness. Why? Because that will further embed it within my personality, and that will affect my descendants. Anochi afar va'efer. Afar va'efer are disparate particles that are brought together as one, and disparate particles that remain separate. And for Avram, they are two stages. He is currently afar, meaning it's all within him and he's one person and containing all of that. And therefore, while he is afar, before he becomes afar and the Jewish people emerge, he wishes to embed this midah. That's in a sense what happens when a master of halacha looks at the psukim al derech hadrush. There is another element to Avram's davening for Sodom, and again we're somewhat perhaps taken aback by it. After all, that why does he feel? Does he feel in a sense that he should be davening for them? Is there any background or any special connection? Not that we're aware of. And yet, perhaps there is. The Gemara in Masechet Nedarim, Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, raises a question. It's a question to which we may think we have a very simple answer. But the question of the Gemara is, Mipnei ma ne'enash Avram Avinu? Why was Avram punished? V'nishtav dubon of l'mitzrayim, masayim ve'esar shanim, and that his descendants were subjugated by Egypt for 210 years. Now we may think that we know the answer, and that is it's in the Brisbane Habesarim. He said Bama Eidaki Rashenna, and that was perhaps incorrect, and therefore Hashem says Yado Atida. That interestingly is one of three answers given by the Gemara, but it's only one of three. And really what the implications are that perhaps that itself was a symptom of a prior issue. And Rabbi Yochanan says, amazing. What Avram was being punished for, Shehifrish b'nei Adam milihikonis tachas kanfei hashchina, because he withheld people from entering under the wings of the Shechina. He withheld people from entering into what was then a Torah lifestyle or an Ivri lifestyle. How so? Shene emar, ten li hanefesh v'haruchush kach lach. Give me the people and keep the spoils. Whose words are those? Those are the words of the king of Sodom. And the reference is, of course, to last week, the battle, the four kings and the five. Avram, he has the people, and he has the rechush. I mean, that's the only reason why the king of Sodom will negotiate with him, because he doesn't have anything. And he very graciously says, you have everything, I'll take half. And says, Tein li hanefesh, give me the people, baruchush kaflach. Now, interestingly, we know Avram's response from the pasuk. He famously said, "In michud vatzuch nal, I won't take anything," and he gives the ruchush. The focus is on the fact that he did not accept that he should keep the ruchush. He gave it back. The pasuk doesn't really focus as to what happened to the people. The people of Sodom, they're also part of the equation. As the king of Sodom says, "Teni anefesh, give them back." Did he give them back? Obviously he did. They are the population of Sodom in a few years' time. And Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara is drawing our attention to this and saying that as surely as it was correct for Avram to return the property, because why should he keep it, but it would have also been correct not to return the people. He has them under his jurisdiction. I mean, he is their liberator. So in a sense, he should have then taken them and been Avram Avinu to them, and we never really know why he didn't do that. But he released them back to the king of Sodom, including Lot, interestingly. When Lot, his nephew, who left him. I mean, one wonders about, you know, the next time they met was when Lot was in the war and he captured him. And he allowed them all to go back, and Lot just went back with them. He did not just realize that perhaps he should go back to Avram, and we don't see that Avram put any pressure on him to do that. That's itself a very interesting discussion. But certainly the people of Sodom, the Gemara says, he shouldn't have given them back. Interestingly, just to tie this in once again to our shir of last week, this opinion of the Gemara seems to be in alignment with the understanding that the Brisbane Habesarim happened after the war. We mentioned last week that according to the Seder Olam, Brisbane Habesarim happened first when Avram was 70. But if that's the case, then the Brisbane Habesarim, when he's told about the subjugation of his children, would have been before the war with the four kings and the five. This couldn't have been a factor in that. This opinion of the Gemara seems to read the Psukim in a linear way. First was the war, and then was the Brisbane Habesarim. That's what the Mefarshim point out. But at any rate, Ramer Chodosh Zatzal, who was the Mashgiach of the Chevron Yeshiva, and later on in Ateres Yisrael, which is where I learned, although after his time, he suggests, therefore, that perhaps this is why Avram extended himself so much to daven for the people of Sodom, as much as they were showing. It could be that there was a certain feeling of achrayus for him, because he had them in his hand. And we don't know why he let them go. Maybe he thought they'd learned their lesson, but they didn't. But nonetheless, as they're facing their destruction, Avram feels the least he can do is just to daven for them, because there really is that background between them. That's a very interesting suggestion from Rav Meir Chodesh. And it occurred to me, perhaps as a PS to this, that this may explain to us another phenomenon. Later in the Torah, in Chumash Shemos, where in Parshas Bo and Perek Yud-Beis, the Torah tells us that when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, Gam Erev Rav Allah Itam, a mixed multitude also came with them and traveled with them, and apparently they were accepted. Now, we know that the Erev Rav were not a source of great nachas for Bnei Yisrael. They're implicated and involved in pretty much every disaster, the major disaster that took place. And they're presumably not really necessary to take them in the first place. I mean, one could say that they'll be hangers-on at best, if not an actual impediment. And it's interesting to ponder, if we may, Moshe accepts them. It's interesting to consider, was it ever an option for Moshe to say, I'm very sorry, this is for the Jewish people only. I mean, you can follow your own fortune, but you have nothing to do with us. And he didn't do that. And he took them in. And why would he do that? And perhaps the Gemara in the Dorim will help us understand a little bit, because according to the Gemara, the entire exile from which they have just today recovered was significantly as a result of Avram not taking on people that he could have brought tachas kanpei hashkina. And therefore, on the day that you're liberated from that exile, and now a group of people come and say, can we be part of the Jewish people? So perhaps that was part of the equation as to Moshe says, I can't say no. How can I say no today? Avram said no when we ended up in Mitzrayim. And therefore he took them on, even though they were proved to be a source of difficulty. That perhaps is a possibility. And let us now take a look at Avram's tefillah. And as we see, in a sense, what's important, we know the numbers, 45, 40. It's important not to get used to the psukim, because if we do, we will miss differences in nuance between the psukim. Specifically, and really the numbers happen in Perek Yud Ches between Pasuk Kaf Ches and Pasuk Lamed Beis. Avram says, so it's begun with 50, and 50 is okay. And then, Ulay Yasun Chamishim Atzadik M'Chamisha. What if they, the 50 are only missing 5? Hatashis B'Chamisha B'Cholayir, were you? Destroy the whole place over 5. This 45, no, I won't destroy. And then in Pasuk Kaftes, Avram says, Ulai matzu sham arbaim. And Hashem says, okay, no. Vayomer lo asebov arbaim. Next Pasuk, Lamed, Ulai matzu sham shloshim. Vayomer lo asebov mitzasham shloshim. Lamed Aleph, what about 20? Esrim. Vayomer lo ashkes bavohar esrim. And finally, what on Pasuk Lamed Beis, Ulai matzu sham asara. We have 5 successive questions and answers. Avram says, if that number, what then? What then? And Hashem answers that he will, in the affirmative, so to speak, in the positive. And yet, there is a difference in the phraseology between these psukim. Specifically, if we go back to Pasuk Ches, when Hashem says, if he finds 45, he says, Vayomer lo ashchis, I will not destroy. In the next pasuk, when there's 40, Hashem says, Vayomer lo e'eseh, I will not do. Well, not do what? Presumably not destroy them. But he doesn't say that. It's shifted from lo ashchis to lo e'eseh. Similarly, in the next pasuk with regards to 30, Vayomer lo e'eseh, imim tasham shloshim. But then, in pasuk lamed aleph, when it goes down to 20, it goes back to Vayomer lo ashchis b'avor ha'esrim. And similarly, in the final pasuk, when it goes down to 10, Vayomer lo ashchis b'avor ha'asara. So if we may summarize, essentially we have 5 cases But it shifted. It began with Ashkhis, then twice Lo Easeh, and twice again back to Lo Ashkhis. V'chol zeh omer darsheni. What is behind the shift in phraseology as the numbers go down? And Meshech Chochma gives a wonderful explanation. Firstly, we need to establish what is Avram looking to achieve if you have that number of people. If there's 50 people, or if there's 45 or 40, how much is he looking to save? If there's 50, we know there's 5 cities. If there's 50, each one has a minion, so the minion will work for each city. But as you go down and you start dropping people, and it's 45 or 40, if it's 40, for example, or 30, are you relinquishing one city, and at least it's 40 for the 4 remaining cities, or 30 for the 3 remaining cities, 20 and 10 for 2 and 1? That is the approach of Rashi, that as Avram is going down in numbers, he's also going down in the number of cities that he could potentially save. However, the Ramban says no. Avram Avinu, the original number of cities was 5 that he's looking to save, and that remains the number even as the number of people go down. And Meshech Chochma concurs with that. And based on that, we do appreciate, however, that the less tzaddikim there are to go around, perhaps the less protective power they will have. And how does that express itself? It began with 50. 50 was almost the natural number, as if to say if there's 50, of course. Why? Because that means that each city will have a minion to protect it, and the minion is really the micro-representation of it. Sibor, even at that time, Ibn Ezra interestingly said, this is the source in the Torah for the idea of a minion. Ein dover shebekedusha pachas me'asara, of all places. So don't, and then they didn't have one, but the principle is there. Ad kedei kach. And therefore, if the real protective power comes from a minion, then as you go down, it will always be, could this somehow constitute or be seen as a minion? And the answer is, it depends. If it's, let's say, 40 or 30, if it's 40 or 30 and they're spread out over the 5 cities, you still, at the very least, have a rove of a minion. If there's 40 people, that's 8 per city. If there's 30 people, that's 6 per city. That's still rove of a minion. It's a chiddush, but you know what you're striving for. And you're more than halfway there. And the Torah places great stock in rove, in majority. And indeed it made a difference, says Meshech Chochma. This is the difference. The difference between Lo Easeh and Lo Ashkhis, although they sound largely the same, they're not exactly the same, Lo Easeh, I won't do, means I won't do anything, which really represents full protective power. Lo Ashkhis, I won't destroy them, doesn't sound like nothing will happen, it's just they won't be destroyed, that there could still be some other lower level of retribution. And therefore, says Meshech Chochma, we understand why when Avram is asking for 40 or 30, if they're there, Hashem says Lo Easeh, because if there really are 40 or 30, that means you have majority of a minion per city, so the majority of a minion has more protective power, and the result will be Lo Easeh, meaning anything. But once you go down to 20 and 10, and 20 and 10 are not going to give you even rove of a minion, they're just going to give you good tzaddikim, but they're not a minion or even majority of, right? There's 20, there's 4 per city, and if there's 10, there's 2 per city. So it will make a difference, but it won't make all the difference. And that's why the response to 20 and 10 is Lo Ashkhis. Lo Ashkhis means it will count for something, but it won't count for everything. There will be retribution, just not full destruction. That's how Meshech Chochma explains the shift of Lo Easeh in 30 and 40 to Lo Ashkhis in 20 and 10. There's just one question that remains outstanding, and that is, what about the 45? After all, here we are saying the more the better. And if it's the more the better, then for 30 and 40, there'll be nothing. Then for 45, it's even more, so that should certainly be Lo Easeh. And lo and behold, the response there is Lo Ashkhis. Why? How does more tzaddikim give a worse result? And Meshech Chochma says, there is a concept in Torah called Din V'Cheshbon. And the Vilna Gaon famously explains that Din V'Cheshbon means Din is the judgment for what a person may have done wrong. But Cheshbon, in a sense, is what we would call the opportunity cost. as if to say, instead of doing something wrong, what could you have done right? That also becomes part, and that's the cheshbon, that's the calculation. A din doesn't need to be, an aveira doesn't need to be calculated, it needs to be judged. But what didn't the person do? That's cheshbon. So, the Meshech Chochma says, in a sense, in terms of din, nothing changes if there's 40 tzaddikim or 45. But in terms of cheshbon, everything changes. And the reason why is because the real protective force, the bona fide protective force, is a minion. So if you have a minion, then you have it. But if you don't have it, so then what? So Meshech Chochma says, if there's 45 people in the city, which is 9 per city, then that is an added level of indictment for each individual. Namely, it just took one more person to make the minion. Why were you not that person? You would have made all the difference. If there's 10, they don't need you, so to speak, not for that. And if there's 8, it wouldn't stand or fall on you. But if there are 9, it would. And therefore, from a certain point of view, it's worse when there's 45. Because if it's 45, there's 9 in the city, so each individual then has that indictment. And where were you? You could have been number 10. And that's why the result, it's a curve. It curves backwards. Here, more is less. Because the stakes raise. When there's only one missing, that's something that each person could become. Truly fascinating perush of Meshech Chochma, and we see the attention to detail, lo es, lo ashtes, things that we perhaps may pass by and not notice. The gedoli ha-meforshim, notice these things, explain them, ki yad Hashem atov aleihem. I'd like to move now to the end of the parsha, of course, which is the Akedah. And as we know, Avram is prepared to kill Yitzhak, but in the end he doesn't have to. Which is why really when we often say the full measure of the Akedah is lost on us because we are born knowing that it didn't happen. But Avram has no knowledge that it will not happen, but he's prepared to do it. And indeed, at the critical moment, a Malach appears to him. In Perek Kaf Beis, Pasuk Yud Beis. It begins with Yud Aleph, really, of course, Vayikra, I love Malach Hashem, Min HaShemayim, Vayomer Avram, Avram, Vayomer Hineini. That's really, in a sense, the Madrega of Avram, the equanimity of Avram, even at this critical time. And Malach calls him, he says Hineini, as if he's just ready. Yomal Tishlach Yod Chalanar, don't stretch out your hand, Ataslim Uma, don't do anything. Ki atoyo dati, ki yirei Elokim ato. For now, indeed, I know you are yirei Elokim. Velo chasachtes binchas yichidcha mimeni. Do not withhold your son, even your only son, from me. Interestingly, of course, if we take the word mimeni at the end of the pasuk, I mean, it's not about between Avram and the Malach is representing Hashem, which often happens, mimeni. Although, interestingly, the Sephorno explains that the word mimeni is really qualifying the words yirei Elokim ata. The in-between words are sub-clause. Ki yirei Elokim ata mimeni, you are more God-fearing than me, says the Sephorno. This is the source of the words of Chazal, gedolim tzadikim yosem imalachi hasharis. Tzadikim are greater than malachi hasharis. Because the Malach said to him, you are greater than me, yirei Elokim ata mimeni. The words in between are an explanation of how that comes to be. That's the Sforno's unique sense of syntax as expressed in this pasuk. But in any case, the Malach appears to Avram and that's that. And all's well. Then Avram sees the isle and he brings it as a korban. And then a Malach appears to him again. In pasuk Tezvav, Vayikra Malach Hashem al Avram Shein, it's been a Shemaim. The Malach appears to him again. And says, "Vayomer binishbati num Hashem, ki yana she'asisa davar zeh v'lo chasachtes binchas yechidecha." Again, the same thing. He gives them a bracha, etc. So, in a sense, the basic question is, the parshanut question is, why does the Malach appear to him twice? When, in a sense, we've kind of seen lo chasachtes binchas yechidecha. You know, the point where he's prepared to do it, the Malach appears to him, then goes away, and then appears to him again. Why does he have these two revelations of the Malach? And this brings us to an interesting question. And that is, when did the Akedah finish? When was the Akedah concluded? And as we will see, the answer to that question may depend. It may depend on how we understand what was happening at the Akedah. The Akedah is introduced with the words Achar Hadvarim Ha'elam, the beginning of Perek Kafbeis. Achar Hadvarim Ha'elam. And of course, everyone wants to know Achar Hadvarim Ha'elam, after these words. Which words? And Rashi gives two Perushim. Interestingly, neither of them are immediately connected to the psukim that precede, which is about Avram and Avimelech. It's got nothing to do with Avimelech, although other Mefarshim say it is because of Avimelech. But Rashi says, no. Yeshmer Rabbi Seinu, his first perush is, Rabbi Seinu Omrim, Achar Dvar Shel Satan. After the words of the Satan. Who's the Satan, and what was he saying? So from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and Daf Peites, Shahim Mekatrig Ve'omer, the Satan was accusing Avram and saying, because Suda she'asa Avram, you know, when Beyom Higamelech Yitzhak, when Yitzhak was weaned, Avram made Mishteh Godol, and the Satan said, from all that whole Suda, lo hikriv fanecha, par echad, al ayil echad, he didn't bring you any korbanos. That's the kitruk. Amar lo, so Hashem says to the Satan, klumasa ele bishvil bano, the whole Suda is for his son, don't criticize him. If I would tell him to offer his son himself, he would not withhold that from me, so therefore you have no reason to accuse. That's Rashi's first explanation of what is Achar Hadvarim Ha'eleh. And there are chidushim in this first explanation, aside from the idea itself. Number one, and this really needs to be explored further, we see very clearly, at least according to Rashi, that the Torah, in terms of, shall we say, the relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh, not only, shall we say, does Torah Shebal Peh give us information that we would not have from Torah Shebal Peh, but from Torah Shebichtav, but the Pasuk itself will refer to it, even though it's Baal Peh, because otherwise it won't help you explain the Pasuk. As if to say, the words of the Pasuk that Rashi are coming to explain are Achar Hadvarim Ha'eleh, after these words. Presumably, on a pshat level, whatever these words are referred to in the Pasuk should be elsewhere in the Pasuk, but they're not. They're in Shamayim. They're in Torah Shebal Peh. So, in a sense, it's a really a chiddush that needs, as I said, to be followed through, certain terms of Rashi and beyond. But the Pasuk itself will use as a point of reference something that is not actually in the Pasuk, but is known to us to Torah Shebal Peh. I think that's a chiddush. Within the Rashi itself, there are further chiddushim. After all, Achar Dvarim Ha'eleh, Yitzhak, certainly according to Rashi, is 37 years old at the time. Other we show him, see him as a different age, but for Rashi, he's 37 years old. That's 35 years after the Suda. And the Sultan never thought about it until now. I mean, what else have you got to think about? And so that's quite a delayed reaction. And Achar Advarim Ha'eleh, Rashi himself has told us, the difference between Achar and Acharei is that Achar is Samuch. Achar means shortly after. Acharei can mean a long time. Muflag, a long time after. Achar means shortly after. So shortly after this, except it happened actually quite a long time ago, that is also a question that needs to be discussed. But in any case, with regards to the Nisyonos generally, and in fact the Torah doesn't really give background to the other Nisyonos, this is number 10, shall we say, of Avram's 10 trials. The first 9 are not introduced with the words Achar Advarim Ha'eleh. They aren't apropos or in response to anything that happened beforehand. Apparently they have their own value. The Akedah is unique. It was precipitated by something. But now, what is the value of those other Nisyonos? So the Ramban famously, although it's on the Pasuk of Akedah by the Kimnisa Tavram, as he discusses the idea of Nisoyon, explains that a Nisoyon clearly is not for Hashem to find out what the person is capable of, that Hashem knows, but rather Nisoyon is to bring the person's what they are capable of from potential to actuality. A person grows in Madrega and receives Sahar not for the things that they could do or are capable of doing, but the things that they do, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts them in a situation where they actually do what they are capable of doing, and that develops them. That's the famous explanation of Ramban. Now, what that means is, that's true for all nisyonos, including number 10, which means the 10th nisayon of the Akedah really is a confluence of two things. On the one hand, it's a nisayon, quote-unquote, just like all the other nisyonos, as if to say it has the same value. If Avram does this, it will develop him more and more, even if it's not in response to anything anybody says. But secondly, it does have this element of response to the kitrug of the satan, which the other nisyonos didn't have. So one could almost say, hopefully using the terminology correctly, the Brisker terminology, there were two dinim in Akedas Yitzhak. That is to say, there were two dynamics, there were two values, two goals, really. Number one, to develop Avram through the Akedah. Number two, to provide, whatever that means, a response to the accusation of the satan. Well, if that's true, and if these two elements both exist within Akedah, then in a sense, when we come to ask the question, so when was the Akedah finally over, meaning when was the test complete, the answer will be, well, it depends which element of the test you're talking about. Because when it comes to the accusation of the satan, he didn't bring a korban during the suddah for his son, and the response to that is, but he would prepare to offer his son himself. If that's the response, then as soon as you reach the point where it's clear beyond the shadow of a doubt that if you do not intervene, he will do exactly that, the satan, so to speak, has been mollified, and the issue has been resolved, and that's that, his accusation has been returned. So the Akedah is over in that respect. However, there is another element to the Akedah, and that is bringing into actuality what Avram is capable of, potentially. Has that finished at this point? No. That is really what's behind the aspect of what happens next. He sees the isle, and the pasuk says he went to take the isle, and he brought it as a korban. Why is Avram bringing a korban at this time? And is this still part of the Akedah? Yes, it is still part of the Akedah, because the pasuk says, Vayalehu la'ola tachas beno. He offered it as an ola instead of his son. And those words, instead of his son, as Rashi quotes from Chazal, means that he, in a sense, he follows through in actuality through this korban. Everything that he would be prepared to do, he gives real expression to that in the form of this korban. And that's why the ashes of this korban are called Efer Shel Yitzchak. It's called the ashes of Yitzchak because so much did Avram, in a sense, to the extent that he could, without harming Yitzchak himself, but give real expression to what he was prepared to do. And if the second aspect of Nisayon, represented by Ramban, is to bring into actuality what one the tzaddik is capable of potentially, so the end of the Akedah is not when he was stopped from killing Yitzhak, but from when we brought the isle. And that explains to us why the Malach appears to him twice. In a sense, they represent the two conclusions of the Akedah. The first time he's about to kill Yitzhak, the Malach appears to him, and all he says is, you do not withhold your son. Because that's all, quote-unquote, that had happened at that time. But then when Avram brings the Korban, tachas beno, so then the angel appears to him again, because something else has happened. Another element of the Akedah has now been realized, and Avram is fully expressed in reality to the extent possible what he was prepared to do. And that's why in the second we see the psukim, and this analysis is from the Sefer Shiras David, Rabbi Aaron David Goldberg, Shalita of the Tel Zeshiva in Cleveland. And the second time the Malach appears to him, Pasuk Tet Zayin says, Vayemer v'nishbati lo Hashem, ki ya'an asher asiso es ha-davar hazeh, v'lo chasach les b'nchas yechidecha. Because you did this thing, you performed this matter. The first time he appeared to him, he never said, ki asis as a davar hazeh, because Avram hadn't done anything yet. what you could see was what he was prepared to do. Lo chasavta bin chasichidcha. But the second time round, something else has happened. Not only lo chasavta, you did not withhold, which is mentioned again in the second time, but also ki asisa es hadavar hazeh. So this is the Shiras David's explanation as to the, with regards to the two appearances of the Malach, and it really opens up for us the these two elements within Akedat Yitzchak. The final matter that needs to be resolved for on this occasion is, in a sense, how, with all the greatness of the Akedah, how has this provided a response to the Satan? After all, and presume the Satan will be quite determined, and he'll be watching, was his question actually answered, or was he merely distracted? As if to say, his accusation was, Avram made a Suda, and he didn't bring a Korban, and that let's say that that's, in his estimation, that's incorrect. So Hashem says, you know, he would be prepared to bring Yitzchak himself, and I'll show you that, which he does, which of course is the Akedah, and it's of, for us, infinite zchus. We shouldn't forget, the question of the Satan is, okay, but shouldn't he have brought a Korban? I mean, retroactively that hasn't happened, and that's still neglect in his accusatory terms. So how is Akedah Yitzchak a response to that retroactively? So the Ksav Sofer explains very beautifully that, in a sense, the accusation of the Satan as to how Avram acted in his feast over the weaning of Yitzchak was that he did not fully understand what Avram was celebrating. As if to say, if a person makes a mishter, he's happy, good things have happened to him, he has a son, everything's good. So now the Satan says, because when he's talking about tzaddikim, the Satan will become very frum, and he'll say, shouldn't you bring a korban? You got something out of the equation. Shouldn't you give something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And if you don't, that's neglectful, and that's a point of indictment, it's a point of criticism. But what Hashem is saying to the Satan is, you're looking at the Suda wrong. You don't know Avram. You don't know what's inside of him. As if to say, you looked at the feast and you thought he's enjoying himself. Why shouldn't he not set aside something from Hashem? You don't realize that his rejoicing over having received a son is in order to bring him up as an Eved Hashem, to bring him up as the continuation of the Jewish people. The whole thing is a korban. The whole thing is about his relationship with me. It's not a self-serving thing or his own personal gain. Could I prove it? I could prove it. Because if it's about what he got from it, what if I would ask him to offer up Yitzchak? He probably would not agree, or it would not be so easy, because I've given Yitzchak to him, and now I'm taking him back. But I will show you that if I would ask him, and I will ask him to bring up Yitzchak, he will. But what does that say? That tells us that he's been waiting for the son called Yitzchak in order to dedicate him to me. So if I would ask him to bring it up, he will. But that tells you that from the outset, that's what he was waiting for, and that's what his mishnah was for, and therefore a korban was unnecessary, and that is the silencing of the accusation of the Satan. That's the biur of the Ksav Sofer, which really, again, has a wonderful completing effect on our understanding of that Rashi, at least for the time being. We'll leave it over there.
Gentlemen, we have exactly 10 minutes. We learned how important a minion is.